Paid commercial program and may not represent the views of Bonneville International Corporation or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions from this broadcast are solely those of the individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP, the federal leader in retirement planning seminars. Join NITP this morning for an hour of plain talk on planning your future. You've got questions, they've got answers.
Good morning and welcome to For Your Benefit. We're here this morning to bring down the open season to a slow descent, because it ends next week, I believe. And our guest started it the first week, Walton Francis, author of Checkbook's 2011 Guide to Healthcare Plans for Federal Employees. Is this the 32nd version? Wow. Good morning, Walt.
Good morning.
And good to see you, and it's great to have you in the next to the wrap-up show. And John Elliott, federal benefit strategist?
That'll be fine, yes.
Okay, former Fed, fellow seminar presenter, co-host of the show along with Tammy. Good morning, John.
Good morning, Bob.
It's been
and
a few,
Walt.
It's been a few
good
weeks.
Good morning, John.
All righty, Walt. So you've been to not a gazillion health fairs, but you've been to a few. Any tea leaves to be read?
No, you know, we were talking about that before the show, and I think, you know, we're halfway through open season when the president said, oh, by the way, there'll be a pay freeze next year. I haven't been to a health fair since then, so I can't. But, you know, one thing is the people who go to health fairs are interested people who are wanting to consider their plan options. They tend to collect a lot of brochures, not just everyone, but, you know, they look for ones that might interest them. They collect some of the plan literature, little, because the plans have summary, sort of one or two page kind of handouts that often highlight important benefits. And they get to talk to the plan representatives. I think it's a great institution. The problem is federal employees are scattered in so many installations and buildings and bases all over the country and even in the D.C. area that it's just hard to have enough health shows to get to all those people. But people are curious who go to the shows. They're curious, they're interested, they're looking for better deals, and they often find them.
And what better way to partially, if not wholly, make up for the pay freeze? If somebody was making $50,000 a year and the pay increase would have otherwise been 2%, that's $1,000. Do some shopping here, you could probably save a multiple of that.
Yes, you could. I mean, we show savings for families, okay, in the combination of lower premiums and lower out-of-pocket costs. I mean, our ratings, checkbook ratings, take into account both. If you're in one of the high-price spread plans like GEHA's high option, mail handler standard option, big premium increase this next year, Blue Cross standard option, Samba high option, those are the very pricey plans. They're wonderful plans, but you can save, Blue Cross standard to Blue Cross basic about $2,000. You just got your pay raise back. And there's lots of other lower-cost alternatives, consumer-driven plans by APWU, by Aetna, by GEHA, by mail handlers, okay? Every company has a better deal plan. GEHA standard option, almost a no-brainer. Several of the low-cost local HMOs, thousands.
And I mean, you can drill down to any one of your plans in your book, and I believe you can put it on a computer and you can compare. How many plans could you compare at one time on a computer?
Well, there's two answers to that. we compare all the plans in your zip code. Okay, our online version of Checkbook's Guide. So if you're in some DC area zip code, you'll get and you answer a question or two, like, are you eligible for the CIA plan? Okay, which by the way has been renamed this year, Compass Rose, and it's a pretty good buy, as is the Foreign Service plan. As is the rural mail handlers, a rural carrier plan. Unfortunately, not a lot of rural carriers in the D.C. area. But, you know, you answer a few questions about your pay system and whatnot, and we show you results for all the plans for which you're eligible, which is typically about 24 plans in the D.C. area, and a similar number in most large cities. But then you can zero in and compare plans in more detail, up to, I think it's three that we allow at once. So once you've sort of narrowed the choices from maybe 24 to two or three you want to look at a little more closely, We give you very detailed side-by-side comparisons.
So D.C., Los Angeles, Denver, Chicago all have the same ability to do the same analysis.
Absolutely.
Because you can drill down, like you say, by your zip code. I asked the same question I just asked you to our good friend Tom Bebbington with Federal Long-Term Care Insurance Program, and they do an awful lot of these. Tom says they did close to 400. And I asked him the same question, and he gave me three bullet points. I'll just read the one. He says, overall, it seems that the interest in the plan has definitely increased. More folks came by our tables, and again, they're long-term care, but he also talks to them about the others as well in very general terms, but he's there with the rest. So he feels that there was more, I guess, people coming by and people coming to. Did you find that in the ones you went to, were there more people in the room than otherwise?
It's hard to judge because it's variable kind of from agency to agency and year to year. But yeah, a lot of interest. Actually, you mentioned long-term care. I think people got to remember there's other federal fringe benefits out there, not just health plans, and some of them have a limited open season. Long-term care does not. You can sign up pretty much any time, and it's an option well worth considering. None of the health plans will cover the home health care, you know, help you get your food made and your diapers changed. Your pajamas on and that kind of stuff. And you can get that kind of care at home or in an institution through one of the long-term care associates plans that are sponsored by the federal government. It's also a flexible spending account time, and that is a deadline. You have to decide on your FSA account by December 13th this year.
And what I find is too many people are not in FSAs. When I do the seminars, that's how I find out. I'll say, how many are in FSAs? And remarkably, a lot of people aren't.
I'm not so sure they even know what an FSA is.
Well, they do after we explain it.
Of course.
And also, there are people in the class who could explain it just as well as I can because they're in them. And it's just an opportunity not to be missed.
Now, for those of you that are saying, well, what's an FSA? Flexible spending account. And how is this funded? By pre-tax dollars out of your salary to spend, not on anything you want. You can't go to the movies with it, can't go on vacation with it, but you can use it for health-related issues, pain premium. Can you pay premiums for long-term care with it?
It's easy to find out what's covered. You can elect up to $5,000 still. It's going down to $2,500, I think, in 2014. I don't think that's – they were but you could right now, you can, as you can for several years, designate up to $5,000 for your FSA account. Comes out payroll deduction, 126th each pay period. There are 26 pay periods. And or any dollar amount you want, as low as $250 is the lowest you can elect. And it, out of this account, you pay for non-insured medical expenses. In other words, in items that aren't covered by your health plan. And it's money you're going to spend anyway, so why not get a tax savings? Because whatever you do, if I designate $1,000 for 2011, that reduces my taxable income by $1,000.
And that tax reduction may be greater than what your raise would have been that you're not going to get.
Yeah, so it's the FSAs are a no-brainer, and everybody should consider them, because I can't imagine there's a person who can't come up with $250 of medical stuff that's not insured by their health plan. And this includes all over-the-counter nostrums as well. So
No, stop.
But the caveat
is... That's changing.
Oh, I know.
Next year...
No.
Oh, okay.
It is changing. Heretofore, you didn't have to get a doctor's note.
Right.
Okay. Now, in 2011, that's not going to wait till 2014. You have to get a doctor's note to get your Pepto-Bismol through your FSA account or aspirin or what have you.
This reminds me, there are really two websites every federal employee should look at during open season, and one of them is the OPM, www.opm.gov/insure. And at that website, you not only get a lot of health plan information, but it'll take you to the FSA Fed's website and the long-term care website, so you can check out how flexible spending accounts work, and you can actually go online to sign up for one. The other website everybody ought to go to is Checkbooks.
Of course.
Yeah.
How do they do that, Walt? The people that are going to go
to www.guidetohealthplans, all one word, .org. And what happens when you get there is you get to see right away on the homepage whether or not your agency has subscribed and you have a free online use of it. And about half the agencies in town subscribe on behalf of their employees. You also get to see the text of the book, okay? And I cannot tell you how much advice we have, but there's a lot. I mean, it's so much I couldn't summarize it even. A ton of advice, tips on how to maximize your dollar savings and how to pick a health plan, even if dollars aren't the number one consideration for you. We do quality ratings. There's sort of strategies you can use if your doctor is in one health plan and not another and so on. So by all means, go there and check it out. And if you're lucky, you'll be able to get free access.
And the point being is, of course, we're in D.C., so we have half the entire population, but those outside the D.C. have the same of half the entire population. If the agency has it online, I would imagine it has it online in D.C. as well as outside.
Worldwide.
Okay.
And indeed, our guide, the checkbooks guide, is available worldwide. I mean, we deal with the case where your zip code isn't in the continental U.S., and we rate the plans.
Wow. And how long does it take you to gear up for this? I mean, are you gearing up for the 2011 one already?
Yes, because as I go through open season, I take notes about, you know, sometimes we make a mistake. It's hard to believe. And we have alert readers. Sometimes they catch us out on something, or there's a very important nuance we didn't emphasize well enough. So, no, it's a year-round enterprise, but 90% of the work is done in the month of October when the health brochures first become available.
Okay. We had an email from a fan of the show on the other coast. We're on the East Coast. This person is on the West Coast, and he says there's a sample size of I guess, Kaiser. There were 6,000 people that responded to a questionnaire for the Kaiser, but only 300 for Pacific Care. But it's only because people respond, is it not? I mean, you don't send it out to 6,000 of each and expect each.
What he's referring to is there is actually a national system used, as pioneered by Checkbook and OPM, and later adopted by a broader organization. All health plans in America, all of them is the wrong word, but all the major ones get surveyed every year by something called the CAHPS survey, consumer something health plan. I forget what the stands for, but it's basically they ask a whole series of questions about how well were you treated in your plan. And the survey goes to plan members, and it goes through random choice. Okay, the plans don't get to pick the people to whom it's sent. They just have to produce a list of all the enrollees, you know, and then contractors handle that. Checkbook is one of the contractors, the biggest, I think. Okay, so we specialize in conducting these surveys. Among many other things we specialize in. And different numbers, different plans of different sizes are asked, a different number of people are asked to respond. Kaiser's a huge, on the West Coast, a huge plan. And so I don't remember what the percentage is, but it's like, you know, 1% of the members are quizzed. They don't all respond. Pacific Care has not nearly as many members. That said, you don't need, when you get a response of, say, 300 or 400 people, you are well above the level needed to make reliable inferences within a few percentage points. I mean, some of the national polls on, like, presidential elections only have 2,000 or 3,000 people surveyed. It doesn't take a whole lot of people to get a reasonable degree of accuracy. And there's big differences among the plans in their quality as assessed by their own enrollees. So it's important to get that information.
Okay. And the gentleman goes on to say, secondly, you have another book that rates the best doctors. Are these doctors that are related mostly East Coast?
No, Consumers Checkbook Guide to Top Doctors is national. It covers all the major metro areas in the country. And it's a very interesting methodology. Checkbook asks doctors, which other doctors would you recommend based on your knowledge of kind of what their practice styles and how your patients that also use them have fared. So it's not quite the same as asking, you know, how many of your patients died last year or something like that. But it's pretty good information. And it's one of – Checkbook rates doctors, hospitals, health plans, plumbers, dentists, optometrists, you name it, if service providers. And so we make available not only the guide to health plans but these other guides.
Great. Now, for those of you listening, we're live. It's about 10:20. It's December 6th. We run to about 10:58. Please call us, 202-465-3080. 202-465-3080. Now, if you want to call after that, probably wouldn't be in your best interest because we won't be here. But you certainly can email us at foryourbenefit@nitpinc.com. What is NITP? It's the company that does the show. So it's not a public opinion poll. It's not trying to sell you anything. Fact of the matter is, we don't sell anything. So we sell retirement seminars and mid-career seminars to the federal government, as well as beginning career seminars and Unifocus seminars, and have been doing so for close to 28 years. Anyway, let's come back. Walt, if I were to come to you and say, I'm married, no children, children have grown, or there are no children, and I'm looking to save a few bucks, decent health, you never know what's coming around the corner, good, bad, or otherwise, what do I do? I'm in this X plan. How do I utilize the opportunities provided by the checkbook guide?
Well, first place, you answer maybe a few more questions, like okay. How old are you? And so, okay, but yeah, basically, and where do you live? Because, you know, HMO X is in place Y, but not place Z. Okay, but assuming you're in the D.C. area, we show you both, there's a print version of the guide as well as the online version, but we give you a table tailored to your circumstance. So in this case, I'm assuming it's a GS employee or equivalent pay scale, family of two, okay, a couple, and we rate all the plans available in the D.C. metro area for you. And we group them by type of plan because people have strong preferences. Some people love HMOs. Some people can't stand them. Some people love high-deductible consumer-driven plans. Others can't, are afraid of them. I don't say they can't stand them. They're afraid to even look at them. And then there's the big group of national plans that people are used to, the PPO, fee-for-service plans, that kind of, you know, the Blue Cross and the GIHA and the mail handlers and the letter carriers and the APWU postal workers. And in each group, we show which plans are likely to save that married couple the most money and how much they're likely to save. So, you know, it turns out if you join the Kaiser Standard Option HMO, your total out-of-pocket costs plus premium for the year are likely to be about, and I'm just going to pick one example, $1,200 less than the CareFirst Blue Choice HMO. Now, those are two very different HMOs, and you might be a Kaiser person or a IPA HMO type person, so you might be willing to pay that $1,200 difference, but at least we're showing you the consequence of your choice. And there's another HMO, which is thousands more than that. And we find similar differences in each of these groups, plans that'll save you a few hundred or a few thousand dollars if you choose them over other plans. And you really have, a simple example, because it's a good one to illustrate the kind of choices people have to make, Blue Cross Standard for this same couple. We show that the total cost of that plan, taking into account the likelihood of very high expense years and so on, is $5,600 on average. Okay? The premium is most of that. The plan covers almost all your out-of-pocket. Blue Cross Basic, $3,700. Okay? Almost $2,000 less. A $1,900 saving for that couple if they switch. Let's say they're in Blue Cross Standard now, switch to Blue Cross Basic. Is there some catch to that or something? Well, no, but there are some differences, and one of them is a very important one. The basic benefits are probably, if anything, a little better than standard option benefits in that plan. But in Blue Cross Basic, you can't go out of network. The plan pays nothing towards your out of network costs. So if you really want the ability to go out of network and use non-plan doctors on a large scale, Blue Cross Standard is probably the better choice. But if you're not that concerned about out of network doctors, you figure you can go with the preferred providers. Or maybe you're willing to pay. I mean, it's heretical to suggest it. Suppose this is one doc you have to see once a year and he charges $200. You could always pay that out of pocket. Or you could use a flexible spending account to give you maybe a 25% discount. Well, you could start the year saving $2,000. You then have to pay $200 out of pocket. You're still $1,800 ahead. Yeah. So those are the kind of trade-offs we try to help people make. And the key value added we provide, aside from a whole lot of detailed advice, is to show you what the dollar potential is comparing plan A to plan B.
What the federal employee has, I was once a federal employee many years ago, not for a long time, but I work on the other side of the fence. Private, there's nothing like this in the private industry. Of course, there can't be because they're different companies, But to be able to go in, look at this, gee, if I move from here to here and there's no pre-existing conditions and I'll save X dollars and I got this terrific opportunity to compare plans, just really unique. I wish I had it.
It's a remarkable system. It's there was a Wall Street Journal editorial just the other day quoting a different book that I write, an academic book, about, you know, this program has outperformed Medicare in cost control over the last 25 or 30 years significantly. It's and Medicare is sort of the opposite model. You know, there's a one-size-fits-all, you know. Now, nowadays, we got Medicare Advantage and Medicare Part D plans competing, but the old traditional original Medicare was, you know, you had only – it's like when AT&T was the only phone system in the country. Ma Bell, you had to use their system.
Since you brought up Medicare Part C,
I knew this was coming.
Did you? I didn't until a second ago. Part C, Medicare Advantage. Is there any reason for an employee to, as they could do, suspend their FEHB plan to be in Medicare Part C?
Absolutely. This is one of these. It depends on what audience I'm speaking to, but I'm going to take it that the radio audience that's listening to this show is a sophisticated audience. When people turn 65 and they sign up for Medicare, basically, and they have the FEHBP, they're signing on to have two health plans at once, and they're paying two sets of premiums. Gets pretty pricey. So the question is it really worth it to have two at once? One way to have your cake, but they don't want to give up their FEHBP, and a lot of them don't want to give up Medicare, so they're kind of stuck. Medicare Part C, the Medicare Advantage program, is a way out of being stuck. What you do is you suspend your federal employee enrollment. You can come back to it. You haven't lost it. It's not quitting. It's suspending. You sign up for a Medicare Advantage plan. Okay, you're paying only the Medicare Part B premium and maybe a few hundred dollars a year more. You're getting the Medicare prescription drug benefit. The total benefit package won't be quite as good as your federal employee plan. But it's good. It's very good. So maybe it's you're going from an A- to a B+. It's not a big drop-off. All these Medicare Advantage plans now have a catastrophic out-of-pocket guarantee, just like the federal employee plans do. I mean, it's gotten a lot better than it was, say, 5 or 10 years ago. But now you're only paying one set of premiums, depending on whether it's a self-only or a couple. So you've probably more than halved the total premiums you pay. So I'm back to the point, you can always pay a few dollars out of pocket, you know, if need be, totally out of pocket. And the Medicare Advantage plans include more or less the same range of plans as the federal employee program. There's HMOs, there's PPOs, there's even a few high-deductible consumer-driven type plans. So you have a lot of choices of plans. Typically, in this metro area, I haven't checked this year the full range, but last year it was – actually, it depends on your zip code a lot. D.C. has fewer than Virginia and Maryland, but it's around 30, okay? A lot of plans.
Speaking of high-deductible plans in combination with a health savings account, they've been wildly unpopular. I think they were introduced about 4 years ago. But based on at least my anecdotal evidence, that is the seminars, hardly anybody is ever in an HSA or in a high-deductible health plan in my classes. My feeling is that more people should be in them, should be taking advantage of them.
Absolutely. If I'm looking here at a list of the about 10 plans that would save you the most money next year, typically, compared to some of the high price spreads that most people are in, half of them are consumer-driven or high-deductible plans. I think there's some conservatism in the federal workforce, like only 15% of people take flexible spending accounts when it probably ought to be at least 90%. You know, how many people signed up for FERS when they had the chance to switch from SERS? And the answer, it was like 2 or 3 or 4%.
Yeah, it was 2%. Yeah. Both open seasons.
Yeah, it's okay. High deductible plans with health savings accounts and the similar consumer driven plans counted. They're new to the program. They only been in the FHP about, I don't know, 5 or 6 years now. First couple of years, they attracted almost no enrollees. They're now up as a group to 75,000 enrollees. That's a big number, but it's a small percentage. It's only a couple of percent of the total enrollment in this program. I don't know why people aren't joining them in droves.
I had a guy in my class who was in one, has been with Aetna, the Aetna high deductible and HSA, of course, And he just rhapsodized about it and then sent me and followed me up with an email rhapsodizing about it, which I'm going to include in a future guest column at some point, his take on his experience with HSA and high deductible plan. And he is just absolutely sold on it.
It's a great, here, give me an example.
And he's not a young man. He's
Let's take the example of someone who's within 5 years of retirement. Maybe your spouse covers you with his or her insurance. Okay. You need to be continuously enrolled in the FEHEP for those 5 years, but you hate to spend on two premiums and so on. Join a high deductible health plan. Get a health savings account. The health savings account amount in most of these plans is actually more than your tax preferred premium cost. That is, you can wind up the year with more money in the bank than you started, and the money goes into these savings accounts tax-free, it grows tax-free, and it comes out tax-free. They're like an IRA on steroids. Yeah. They are the best savings vehicle that exists. They're better than Roth IRAs. They're better than the federal government's thrift plan. It's in terms of tax savings. You can put in what are called catch-up contributions if you're in one of these plans and you're in the, I forget the age, I think it's 50 and above.
It's 50,
like
yeah.
It's almost a no-brainer. You know, there's so many people that could save so much money by being in one of these plans. Why they aren't signing up?
I know why.
I think it's because of the complexity of them, but more than often fear of the unknown. They were introduced, but they weren't sold particularly well. And I don't really feel that maybe it's OPM's obligation to sell things like this, but that's it. I mean, we talk about them, at least I talk about them in my seminars, but I don't sense that there are going to be a lot of people still migrating towards these. You hope there are a few. And I always said, look, particularly if you do a mid-career or new career, where you've got more young people, they've got a long time to save and invest and build up a health savings account. They're generally in good health, so they can handle the high deductibles. And by the way, your preventive care to keep you healthy does not count against your deductible. And as you say, you save taxes putting money in, reduces your taxable income, and then coming out, it's tax-free as long as you use it for medical expenses. What if you get to the end of and you say, hey, you know, I want to take money out of my health savings account, but, you know, I'm healthy. I have no. You still can, but then, Bob, it becomes a taxable event. But you can, you know, if you want to go buy that boat someday after years of building up this account and you're willing to pay taxes on the interest on your account over the years, you can do it.
You hit the bullseye. Now, again, I'm an accountant. I'm a tax accountant. And I find the smartest of people do not understand taxes or the theory. No, they understand the theory behind it, but they don't always understand it. So when you couple this as tax advantage and it's high deductible, they hear the high deductible and tax, and they go, I'm happy with what I have.
That's what scares them is the high deductible.
Yes, and one way to think about them is don't think about 1 year. Think about, say, a 10-year period. Suppose you're in a high deductible plan where you put in $2,000 a year in a savings account. After, if you just have an annual physical those years, you wind up with $20,000 plus whatever it earned at the end of let's say in the 10th year, you get hit by a truck. High expenses, $100,000, $250,000. What happens? You'll pay a $2,000 deductible, and then regular insurance kicks in. And in the worst case, if you're out of pocket more than $5,000 self only and $10,000 couple, the plan picks up 100% of the rest. Your money ahead.
Okay, let me ask a really simplistic question. Let's say my premiums were $500 a month. Maybe that's too high. Let's just say that's coming out of my pocket. So I got a high deductible plan, and they were reduced to $300 a month. The premiums. Because I got a higher deductible.
Oh, because you mean lower premiums compared to the national plans.
Yeah.
You'll pay a lower premium. It won't be half. It might be two-thirds.
Okay, so...
And you get the savings account.
Okay, that money goes over here.
Yeah.
I have the same illness under both plans already, and I have the same out-of-pocket. And I had to pay X dollars, a lower amount, if I didn't have the high deductible, and I have to... And have I hurt myself?
Probably not, but yeah. I'm not going to bet. That's why you look at Checkbook's Guide, okay? Because we make that comparison for you. We show you how will you do in each plan in a good year when your expenses are low. Well, actually, we show if your expenses are zero, low, medium, average, or high, or out of sight. So, you know, you can see how you do in each plan. Typically, you will do better in the high deductible plans and the consumer-driven plans when your expenses are low or very high. The people who probably shouldn't join one of these plans are the ones who have a known, predictable, you're diabetic and you're going to spend $3,000 a year on drugs year in and year out no matter what. These are not the plans for you. You want to be in the best prescription drug plan without a deductible, okay? But kind of the opposite. You're probably an HMO. Actually, a lot of the diabetics don't, but should be in HMOs where you get the very best prescription drug coverage. But, yeah, most people where your health expenses in any one year tend to be close to zero or and for most years, and once in a while bop up because that's the year you broke your leg or had a baby or whatever, you know. These are great plans. And by the way, open season always gives you the opportunity to, let's say, because I've counseled young couples who come up to me and say, we are putting money, socking money away in our health savings account. We can't believe how good it is for us, but we're going to have a baby next year. What should we do? We're thinking of joining an HMO and having it covered 100% and then switching back to the high deductible plan the year after. And I said, you've got it. You've figured it out. That's why we have open season. Everyone should take advantage of it. If you can make a plan choice that's to your advantage, go for it.
Everybody should listen to what Walt just said. And this would be true for somebody young, mid-career, or pre-retirement. And they go, you know, I don't have these diabetic issues right now. And then, boom, unfortunately, they pop. You can switch plans.
Yeah.
Next open season.
Right.
So this isn't
including an in retirement.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Okay, so I hope we got the message across.
Yeah, it's something worth looking at and shouldn't be missed. I know we've only got a week to go, but there'll be another open season in a year from now.
After you've wasted another $1,000 or $2,000 or $3,000 by not sitting
right.
down for half an hour.
You got a week.
And you could have made up for the lack of raise.
Here's where you can also read about it, is at OPM's website, opm.gov, /insure. And you'll see a little HSA thing and click on that, and it will explain how they work as well.
Yeah, but I might add, very well explained, both on the OPM website and in the individual plan brochure. So you can download, again, you go to the OPM website. Oh, our website explains these plans very well, too. But either way you go, you can download a brochure. So let's say you pop the brochure for APWU Consumer Driven or GEHA High Deductible or Mail Handlers High Deductible or Aetna Consumer Driven, okay? And there's a couple more. That the brochure will actually explain to you in pretty clear English how the plan works and what happens and how, you know, you will have to study it a little bit because it's enough different that, you know, it takes a little wrapping your mind around it. But it's not a hard piece of homework to do.
Is the federal dental and vision program in your purview?
Oh, yeah. We compare all the dental plans, including not just the standalone dental plans, but the ones that you get, like an MDIPA HMO, they have a very nice dental benefit. You get some modest to medium good dental benefits in FEHVP plans. Let's come back on that, and we'll talk about some of the best buys.
Because we have a caller. Good morning.
Good morning. You have been speaking about the high deductible plan being a great savings vehicle, particularly for young people that don't have health issues. I'm on the other end of the spectrum where I'm about 5 years from retirement, and I have a chronic condition that requires about average health number of visits and specialty requirements. Is the high deductible a good option for someone in my situation?
It really depends on how high your expenses are. Because here's how they work. I'm going to use illustrative numbers because each of them is a little different, but this is kind of, first place, your annual physical, or semi-annual physical, depending on how often you do it, and all your other preventive expenses, things like adult vaccines, a vaccine against, for example, shingles, okay, a very terrible disease, and you don't ever have to get it. Your mammogram, all those things are all covered now 100% in every plan, Okay?
Yes.
So that part of it, forget, you know, you do it, but you don't have to pay anything. Then if you're in a high deductible plan, you the plan will give you, and I'm I think you said self-only, something yes. around $1,000 in a savings account.
Correct.
Now, if you're going to do $1,000 worth of doctor visits and drugs, sort of add those two things up, and go a little higher, then you're going to be into the deductible range, and that's also typically going to be about maybe a little higher, maybe $1,200, and you pay all the next $1,200. So just using those two numbers, assume that your expenses next year are $2,200. You're going to be $1,200 out of pocket, okay? So that's the circumstance where the high deductible plan doesn't work as well. If your expenses are a little lower, you'll still be money ahead, probably. And if they're a little higher, you get past the deductible and the health insurance kicks in. But now you've lost the advantage of the savings account, okay? Because if you've, you, by the way, you don't have to use the savings account. You can spend out of pocket and keep the money in the savings account. And you even can make what are called, I think we said catch-up contributions. I guess we mentioned that before to it. So, but look, if your routine predictable expenses are in this range, somewhere around $2,000 or $3,000 a year, high deductible plan's not for you. It's for people who have unroutine expenses, usually very low, occasionally very high.
Okay.
Not sure I'd give you any better advice.
No, that was very clear because generally speaking, I exceed the deductible and usually the last 4 months of the year, I'm getting free care because I've exceeded my deductible.
Well, in that case, you may, we're now down to, hey, you really have to compare a couple different kinds of plans to see what your best advantages. That's I'm back to www.guidetohealthplans.org.
Yes, I have it.
Okay, great. And I, you know, but you may want to change then.
I do have to change because the plan that I was on is being removed from the federal health benefit plan.
Oh, well, in any event, it's an opportunity to sort of make your profit maximizing, if I can put it that way. How about your cost minimizing decision?
Yes.
And I wish you luck.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We should also add maybe that once you're enrolled in Medicare at 65, you can't be in a health savings account any longer.
Correct. And it, actually, the rule is you can't be covered by other health insurance, okay? So right. And be in a high deductible plan. But you can be in a consumer-driven plan. And they operate very similarly. They have it's a different kind of savings account. It's called an HRA. We're getting into the weeds here, but the HRA is money that grows over time. It's not use or lose. You can accumulate, but if you leave the plan, it's the plan's money. It's not your money. If you're in a high deductible plan, when you leave the plan, the HSA savings account is your money. So you could, for example, be in a high deductible plan, and then when you turn 65, join Medicare, you still keep the savings account. Okay, it's available the rest of your life.
Absolutely, yeah.
But you won't be able to be in the HSA. You won't be able to make new HSA contributions, I guess is the best way
right.
to put it. That said, you know, there's lots of individual cases. Some people don't stop working by age 65. Even some feds keep on going. You don't have to sign up for Medicare the day you turn 65. If you're still working, you have a penalty-free delayed enrollment in Medicare.
Right.
So if you keep out of both Parts A and B at that point and keep working, you could be in your high deductible plan.
But since Part A is free, in a sense, at 65, I mean, you paid through payroll taxes, but it's a free, that's the hospitalization portion of Medicare,
very fancy in my advice here. Most of these federal employee health plans pay your hospitalization either 100% or close to it.
Uh-huh.
So Part A, yes, everybody should sign up for Part A. My point was you really have some control, and if you are in particular are trying to build up your health savings account, you can postpone that Part A enrollment a little bit. That said, for most people, it's a fairly, I think, straightforward kind of equation. The high deductible plans work for people young or old, as long as they're not covered by other insurance, and as long as their health expenses tend to be unpredictable, but usually low, which is where most of us are. But, you know, that's just one family of plans. There's the HMO family of plans. There's the PPO family of plans. So there's, you know, as I said before, roughly 24 choices in the D.C. area, a big chunk, you know, half a dozen at least of each type of plan. So don't feel – we're not trying to push you one way or the other. To give you a different example, I think Kaiser Standard Option is, without question, for most people, the most spectacular health insurance buy available in the D.C. area. A lot of people don't want to join Kaiser, partly because I think people are ignorant of how that HMO model works. People will say to me things like, well, you know, I have a lot of allergies. My kids need shots. Well, hey, Kaiser is a great place. You go to the clinic. They give you the shot. It's not, it's hassle-free, relatively speaking. So it all depends on your health needs, your family's health needs, and kind of what healthcare delivery model you like or don't like.
And we had Kaiser on, I think it was three, could have been 4 weeks ago, and these shows are archived on our website, NITPINC.com, left-hand side, homepage, For Your Benefit Radio Show. Click on and scroll down to the Kaiser show. And Walt, of course, was on about 6 weeks ago, so you can hear that. And we cover some different issues then than what we are today, so we could put the two together. Anyway, again, we're here, and I enjoyed the caller's question, 202-465-3080. You have about 13 minutes left to do it. Please do so. Now, Walt, before the phone call came in, we were off on some, and you'd say we'd come back to it, and I forgot what
it was. The dental and vision plan.
Oh, yeah, dental. There's about half a dozen dental plans. They have some great advantages and one disadvantage. The advantage is that you can get into a plan. The way they really save money is by getting these preferred rates from the dentists, okay, who participate in the network. And that's to your advantage because let's say the dental plan says we'll pay half the cost of a crown, which is expensive, and that's basically what they're going to pay. They're not going to pay most of it. But if you're already getting a discount rate from the dentist, the crown that otherwise might have been $1,200 may only be $900, and the health plan pays $450 of it, and you only pay $450. It's going to be the dental plan, not the health plan. And so that's a huge discount from sort of paying retail. So I think the trick in deciding whether or not to join a dental plan is to talk to your dentist, okay, about what health plans are you prefer, dental plans are you preferred with, including not just the standalone dental plans, but, you know, he may be preferred with MDIPA, for example, which I mentioned before. So you really have a lot of options. And then you have to decide, are you willing to pay that extra premium, which is pretty substantial for a dental plan, $300 or $400, and, you know, for self only, and about double that for here you can sign up for a couple, or then you can pay another chunk and sign up as a family. So, you know, you really have to decide, is it worth paying a total premium, which, you know, may be in a couple of cases over $1,000 to cover yourself. And of course, guess who joins these plans? Other people with a mouthful of problems. So they are, I think, they're very popular. A very substantial fraction of federal employees are in them. They work well with the flexible spending account because if you're going to have, let's go back to my example of that crown, you could put the $450 you're going to pay out of pocket in your FSA account and get a big tax break on it, and so it really only maybe costs you $300, and maybe you're going to have two crowns next year, okay? Mm-hmm. Well, that's the case, we ought to be one of these dental plans, for
yeah,
sure.
But if you're like me, I have to be put out to have a crown put. I've had one crown in my life, and it was way back in my mouth, and my regular dentist said, I can't do anesthetic, but I'll send you to somebody who can. So it was really expensive. Of course, I didn't have... Well, yeah, I did, because through my wife, who is a federal employee, but her agency is funded by the bank, so we had free dental and vision. But so I made out okay, but it can get expensive. Now, I'll just give you my experience. For the first time since my wife retired last March, we no longer get our dental and vision free from the controller of the currency. So for the first time, we both looked at the federal dental and vision plans. My wife ended up getting one of the dental plans. I have virtually no, except for that one crown one time, because I apparently grind my teeth. I didn't get a dental plan, but I did get a vision plan, because I get a year's supply of contacts every year, plus an annual exam. So I looked at several of the vision plans and picked out one where actually I would save about $30 more a year by enrolling in a vision plan. It doesn't sound like a lot, but $30 is $30. In other words, the premium was less than the benefit I got, and that's what you're looking for.
Yeah, the vision plans, typically the premiums are roughly in the ballpark of $100 a year for one person, $200 a year for two people, $300 for three people. You will get a discount on your eyeglasses or your contacts. You'll probably save $20, $30, $50, you know, compared to what you otherwise would have spent.
Yeah.
And it's a little nice little piece of change, but it's not big dollars. The dollar savings are going to come from picking the better deal health plans.
Okay, so. When people look at health plans, for example, mail handlers, not to pick on that, but do I have to work for the post office or Compass Rose? Do I have to know Bette Midler's song? do people just kind of back off because it doesn't sound like the well-known brands?
Well, some do, but that's because they haven't. Again, it's a modest amount of homework you have to do. All these plans with the mail, the postal related names, all of them except Rural Carrier, take anyone. You know, you can be a GS employee, you can be a Foreign Service officer, you can enroll in one of their three mail handlers plans. There are a couple of APWU plans. There's NALC is a very solid plan, a better buy. One of the plans people should consider. Who are in a really high price spread now, a very small, modest change. You're still in the same kind of plan. It's got a little better prescription drug benefits than Blue Cross Standard. NALC, National Association of Letter Carriers, you do not have to be a letter carrier to join that plan.
And it's not run by the post office. It's not run by an intelligence agency.
No.
It's run by health care company, right?
Yeah. And some other plans. SAMBA used to be restricted. It was Special Agent Mutual Benefit Association. You had to be in the FBI as an agent to be in that plan. No, everybody could be in SAMBA now. Compass Rose and Foreign Service do restrict you to being basically in the Foreign Service / Intel / Defense communities. Well, that's like half the government, okay? So you got a lot of choices.
Does that include DHS? Can they be in those?
Yeah.
Okay.
It may only be certain parts of the Department of Homeland Security, okay. But yes. If you look at – I didn't bring the brochures with me, but if you look at the one that sticks to my mind is Compass Rose lists. It's like 20 agencies you could be in on the cover of their brochure. It's easy to check.
Okay. Well, hopefully we're enlightening people that – because some of these names, when I hear them, I go, well, isn't that just for that agency? And it's not. Maybe it was, but it isn't anymore. Otherwise, it wouldn't be in here, right?
Right.
So this is any and all. And we got 1 week. Does it end at midnight next week, next Monday?
You know, I know it ends Monday. I'm not sure what time of day. That's
I always assumed it was close of business. So that's
I think COB.
Yeah.
I should say, if you're a retiree and you're really having trouble getting brochures, maybe you don't use the internet, okay, so you can't just quickly download them and read them online, and you have to write away. There is a post office box that OPM will send you to get them. You can get a few extra days if you're having trouble getting a brochure you need to make your choice. And you can call OPM and talk to them about that. But, you know, my advice is, hey, if you're an employee for sure, because you won't get that extension, just do your homework now. If it takes you a couple of days to get all the pieces together, fine. Yeah. Don't wait.
I mean, you can do the homework in at least a day, if not a few hours in a day.
Oh, I think almost anyone could figure out what they need to figure out in half an hour or an hour. Now, there are exceptions. For example, let's say next year you're going to get an artificial hip. Okay, you know you're going to get it. Well, now you need to think about what plan, and you have picked your doctor. Well, you want to be talking to your doctor about what health plans are you preferred with, because you want to be in a health plan in which that doctor is a preferred provider, that surgeon. Okay, similarly, if you're going to have a baby, what health plan is your obstetrician with? And be sure the hospital is preferred as well. So, and maybe you haven't picked your obstetrician yet. Well, maybe you need to spend the next week at least narrowing down your choice. Find a couple, if they're both in Blue Cross or if they're both in Aetna Open Access HMO or something like that, that may swing you there. So some people have to do a little more homework, or if there's a particular expensive drug you're going to be taking. Some plans, it'll be a formulary preferred drug, and some it won't. So it really depends on your health situation. But by and large, it's kind of a no-brainer. If you are just an ordinary person, have no really high expenses, you know, you may or may not get sick next year, but if you did, you wouldn't know what it would be. You can almost just go, I would never say use Checkbook's ratings alone. You really always have to open a brochure of a plan. If you think you're going to stay where you are, look at the brochure, see how it changes for next year. Look at the summary page. Make sure that the plan didn't make some change that will inconvenience you or worse, cost you a lot of money.
Good.
We hardly have enough time to talk about the Medicare Part B issue, but it's a question I get a lot from federal employees and certainly retirees, is the to be or not to be question. And I know I've heard your answer before, but so I kind of know what the answer is going to be. It's a highly individualized decision. There's no template to say, oh, yes, you should take Part B, or no, you shouldn't take Part B. Have I got that?
Exactly. Let me just say, because I'm going to shock people with what I say in a second. I think probably most federal retirees should take Medicare Part B after they go through the calculus that I'm about to mention. But let me tell you a shocking fact. If you are in Blue Cross Standard Option, a retired couple with both having Medicare Parts A and B, next year you will pay $7,500 in premium at least. If you never see a healthcare provider, you're going to be out of pocket $7,500. And what's even worse, that's the least you could be paying, because if you retire next, if you turn 65 next year and sign up for Medicare Part B, you will each pay an extra roughly $20 more than those numbers I just gave you. So that's 40 times 12 months. That's another $500. So you'll be $8,000 out of pocket. And that's not even the highest it could be, because if you're in the income tested premium range, if you're, and I'll use a couple, if your adjusted gross income is over $170,000, you may pay double or triple the regular Part B premium. So let's stop there. It's expensive. And the key question is, what happened when you turned 65 that made that wonderful plan you were in at age 64 turn worse, that you got to go buy Part B? And the answer is nothing happened. It's just as good. So it's a key question people need to address. Now, the overwhelming advantage of Part B is it lets you go out of network. So if you but that's true in all the national plans except two, okay? Blue Cross actually lets you go out of network in Blue Cross Basic, but in all of them except Blue Cross Basic and Mid-Hunters Value, if you go out of network, it covers your hospital and doctor expenses 100% in network or out of network. That's a huge benefit if you want flexibility of providers. You won't get your premium back. You won't even get half your Part B premium back, but you're likely to get maybe a third of it back. So it doesn't really cost you $1,200 a year. It may only cost you $800 a year. So a key consideration for most people is, how much do you value the ability to go out of network and have full coverage? But, and here's the key point I want to leave people with, you don't have to be in Blue Cross Standard, in GEHA High Option, in Mail Handler Standard, or in Samba High Option to enjoy this 100% wraparound coverage. You could be in Blue Cross Basic, in GEHA Standard, in APWU, paying half the premium. So instead of you being in this $8,000 a year situation, you might get it down to $5,000 or $6,000. So there's a multi-$1,000 savings opportunity waiting there. It's like ripe fruit hanging from the tree for you people who are in a pricier plan because you love that wraparound out-of-network benefit, because you can get it elsewhere.
Well, I'm going to have to go home and on two computers. One, I'm going to have your checkbook, God, and then I'm going to listen to this show. And I'm going to stop the show, then I'm going to drill down, then I'm going to listen to the show and drill down. We have just a few seconds left. Final comments. This has been great. As a wrap-up show, this has really been good.
My final comment is, for God's sakes, go spend that half hour. Think about your health situation. Glance at a brochure. Bob, you don't have to get checkbooks, guy. We wish you would.
Okay, we're about done, John.
Bob, over to the OPM website.
Yeah, I can't improve upon that, so I'll just echo what Walt said.
Okay, thanks for echoing. Thanks for educating. See you next week. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP. Please tune in next Monday at 10 a.m. for a topic solely devoted to you, the federal employee. The show can also be heard 24/7 on federalnewsradio.com. Thanks for listening.